Ladies and gentlemen, good morning to you all. Are you ready to begin with our meeting? It was supposed to be a long meeting, but I can assure you it will be long, but not that much today. There are some reasons for that. Today we were supposed to have a joint committee meeting where we both committees at the draft policy on Vienna Transport. And I want to repeat the draft policy because at this stage it's still a draft policy, but it shows us the developments on where this policy is heading to address some of the concerns that we have. We are talking of access to education, and we know that the transport is one of the hands that leads us to that. We know we transport is a role that it has to play for the access and having our learners getting to school as early as they came in without getting tired. We know that the issue of learner transport has been introduced, but there's been no policy. So it is of interest to us as a committee to know what are the developments so far, where are we heading to. We know that when we talk of learner transport, there is no uniformity as to what is happening in various provinces. And we want to know, as to say, this draft policy that is being, that is still in the draft processes, what is happening. We know that it has been out for public comments. We wanted even to hear what is it that will be waiting for at its final stages. But then, unfortunately, the Department of Transport couldn't be with us today. I can't talk on behalf of Delphi Transport, but it means there are things that they are not yet, you know, at the end of when it comes to those policies. There are things that they are still looking at, but the draft policy is there out. It's in its final stages, but we are going to hear from the department what time, while the time frame, what is left for it to be submitted even to cabinet, but what is entailed in that policy. That is what the Department of Education is going to be talking to us about. We can have our contributions, our questions, because it's still going to be tabled. Unfortunately, I'm not yet in the apologies, but you will hear that even the minister, our minister, wanted to be here so that he takes some of the things that you'll be saying, but unfortunately, she is held up somewhere. But I hope our meeting, we are going to come up with some of the contributions, because this level transport has been implemented without this policy. We have seen a lot of challenges. There are lessons that we should have learned as the Department of Basic Education, which even the Department of Transport must take care of. So those are the things that we'll say. If this policy is coming into place, are they covering the challenges as we have seen, as we have gone out as the portfolio committee, even on our other side, things that we have picked up in our constituency. There's so much that we can say around this policy, so that's why it is important that we sit for this meeting. But then, unfortunately, as I'm saying, the Department of Transport is not with us, but we are going to be led by the SNDG, by the SNDG on this draft policy on the transport and members. With your contributions, I hope we are going to add something on what is in place for right now. So, Mr. Brown, are there any apologies that you have?
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, sir. We have received apologies from Honorable Mashabela, who is coming from Sunday, and Honorable Koto will be joining us a bit later. She has a problem with the public transport, but she will be joining us a bit later. And we have received apologies from Minister Chesa for not being able to be with us this morning.
Thank you so much, Mr. Brown. So, Honorable members, ladies and gentlemen, we are going to be speaking to the presentation from the Department of Basic Education that they are here to talk to us about today. I know there is another document that has been circulated. It was a draft that was just sent by the Department of Transport before they realized that they had some problems of which they cannot be part of the meeting today. So we're not going to engage on that one up until maybe the final stages where we get a chance to be having them in our meeting, then we can look at that document. But today, you can start to give us on the
air transport policy that we've been working with the Department of Transport on, and with me is Mr. Solly Mafoko, to the presentation, and then we'll take questions.
Good morning, honorable members. Good morning, sir. The Learners Transport Policy that we are talking about, as we have made a presentation earlier on, is a policy that we have been working on with the Department of Transport through a very consultative process, and it went through for public comment on the 13th of November last year, which comments closed on the 3rd of November, and the committee was established to look at the comments and analyze those comments and finalize the policy. Maybe to indicate, Chair, as well, that we need to emphasize that this policy has been long in the making. And for all these years that we have been providing learner transport as a sector, it has not been guided by any form of a policy. And it is imperative that we finalize this process such that we have an institutional framework that will guide the provision of this. This function. The policy that we are presenting from the side of the DBE is the work that we have done with the Department of Transport. And we have factored all the comments that we received through the public comment process. The objective, to a very large extent, is to provide access to education in terms of providing a safe and effective and integrated and sustainable transport system. The key and what is important to us is that there must be integration throughout the process. All the stakeholders must be involved in the planning and the provision of a safe and a secure learner transport. That should also include collaboration with law enforcement authorities to ensure that we provide a safe learner transport system to our learners. One of the issues that we are looking at in terms of addressing through this policy is to how do we deal with unroadworthy vehicles, distances that our learners have to walk, planning issues, management and the monitoring of the provision of transport. And we would love to have, as the outcomes, a very coherent system where our learners get to school on time, where we have a coordinated approach to planning and the implementation of learner transport, where we have a kind of a unified approach or uniform approach to the provision of learner transport, where we have a viable and a sustainable provision of learner transport across the sector. The focus of this policy, honorable members, is to ensure that we address the issue of quality of vehicles through the different stakeholders. We look at the performance and conduct of learners and transport operators. And as I have already mentioned on several occasions since the beginning of this presentation, that there is alignment and integration in the provision of the service. The policy would apply to the transportation of learners from grade R to 12. Now, I'll just spend a bit of time on the institutional framework as we have discussed with the Department of Transport and put into the policy that, first of all, in terms of the monitoring, the DBE and the Department of Transport will oversee the implementation of this policy in consultation with all stakeholders. To this effect, a national interdepartmental committee will be established at all levels at national level, at provincial level, and at local level, which is in our case at district level, to ensure that all structures, all levels have got a role in the monitoring of the implementation of this policy, and to ensure that all our learners have got access to this service. Of critical importance is the planning, which must be discussed at provincial and municipal level, and to ensure that learner transport planning is aligned to the provincial land transport frameworks as well as the integrated transport plans. This must also take into account road safety, transport infrastructure, and other operational matters that have an impact on the delivery of learner transport. Now, one of the critical areas that in the draft document that was published that many commentators referred to that we did not include in the draft document is the issue of the types of service. We have your subsidized or what we refer to as dedicated and non-dedicated transport providers. Now, these are your, for instance, your subsidized, these are the types of services that are providing dedicated learner transport and are receiving subsidy from the department. And then you have then those non-subsidized groups that are not receiving any subsidy from the Department of Education. Now, this is a critical element that was not included in the draft. And we have mentioned on several occasions that more than 90% of the challenges that we have in the provision of transport, as it relates to unroadworthy vehicles, as it relates to accidents and so on, are as a result of these non-subsidized providers. These are providers who a group of parents would contract a service provider for the service provider to transport their learners to their school of choice. And this policy is trying to address those, that even if this is a private arrangement, that arrangement is subject to this very policy. And the key, one of the major changes that we have brought into the policy from the draft of this one, is to ensure that those kinds of private arrangements also are bound by this policy when it's promulgated. To this effect, what we will be doing as well is to provide, and that we will address towards the end of the presentation, is to provide training to parents and school governing bodies to ensure that if and when parents engage with learner transport providers, they know what are the contents of the policy and what are the institutional arrangements that they have to make sure that are in place in terms of issues like the roadworthiness of vehicles, the drivers, and all those kinds of things. So that is one critical area that we have addressed. Now, in terms of the policy area, I have already mentioned the issue of learner transport planning, which is very critical. I have already mentioned that a joint planning committee will be established that would be constituted, or that would have representatives from the Department of Transport, the Department of Education in the province and municipality. And this planning committee would look at the determination of needs, infrastructure, facilities, pickup points, and so on. And this would feed into the development of provincial learner transport strategies and municipal integrated transport plans. Those plans would feed into the municipal integrated transport plan. So, to this effect, one of the issues as well that was raised quite strongly in the draft document that was sent out for public comment was the integration at municipal level. And that is an element that we have tried, we have focused quite a lot on in this document as well, to make sure that the municipal element is not left out of this function. The issues of learner transport safety and security, the document has been enhanced quite significantly to deal with all forms that as it relates to learner transport safety and security, to the extent that all transport that is serving learners have to meet the safety requirements in terms of the National Road Traffic Act. The criteria for, but before I step off that one as well, one critical issue is that a code of conduct for drivers and for learners, which would detail the expected behavior and measures for dealing with non-compliant drivers and learners, and procedures and processes to deal with, how to deal with emergencies in terms of accidents, theft, and hijacking, is already in the process of being developed. So a code of conduct for drivers and learners would form part of the institutional framework to ensure that everybody has got a clear direction in terms of what are the expectations in terms of learners, what are the expectations in terms of drivers, in terms of their conduct and behavior in different circumstances as they might relate to the training of learners. The criteria for identifying beneficiaries, the provincial departments of education are responsible for that. Obviously, your parents, learners, SGBs have a role to play in that particular issue. I have mentioned, yes, principals, obviously, in consultation with school governing bodies, must identify learner transport beneficiaries. Service design, that refers to the design of the service that is being provided, your pickup points, your drop-off points, and so on. That would be developed by the implementation department in consultation with other stakeholders. The procurement of subsidized learner transport, what the document is talking about here is that a uniform kind of an approach would be developed in terms of the procurement of learner transport services as it relates to the subsidized transport remuneration. This is one issue that has come out quite a lot in the public comment stage, where different types of remuneration models were proposed. But in general, the thrust was to go in terms of the total kilometer traveled. So the standardized measure of remuneration would be based on the total number of kilometer traveled. But factors like road conditions and distances also shall determine the cost of the service. Funding is critical, and of course the fiscals would be used to fund the function. However, already discussions have started with National Treasury with the view of establishing a conditional grant for learner transport, and discussions obviously will continue in that regard based on the outcome of National Treasury. Modal integration, we have spoken to that. Universal design, that is another item, an aspect that came strongly in the public comment. And it has been enhanced to the effect that the vehicles that are transporting learners must adhere to the principles of learner of universal design, especially for those that are transporting learners with disabilities. Law enforcement, we have spoken to that. Monitoring evaluation. The Department of Transport and Basic Education and provincial departments are responsible for monitoring. But as I indicated, all the stakeholders are also responsible to ensure that the implementation of this policy is properly monitored. So parents have a role to play, educators have a role to play, law enforcement officials have a role to play, all the spheres of government, national, provincial, and local government have a role to play. So the policy quite clearly stipulates the responsibilities of the different players in terms of ensuring that the policy is implemented to the fullest. In concluding, the intervention, some of the other interventions that the policy is introducing is for the Department of Transport on a regular basis to engage with the different law enforcement agencies to ensure that on route between home and school there is enforcement of the law in terms of the National Road Traffic Act and overcrowding, unroadworthy vehicles, both at the level of municipal transport officials and national and provincial transport officials, the enforcement of the policy has to be done by those officials so that we make sure that our learners are protected. Joint intervention and monitoring teams, we have spoken about that. The Road Traffic Management Corporation will also be assisting in terms of road safety programs as it relates to learner transport. And training and education for school governing bodies and educators and parents, I have already mentioned that a training program will be developed to train all the stakeholders, but most importantly, parents, school governing bodies, educators, principals, in terms of the benefits of this policy as it relates to all the aspects that we have mentioned. I think that is the question.
Thanks so much, Department of Basic Education, Mr. Scott, for the presentation. I know as we're continuing with the presentation, I can see every one of us writing down some of the things that you felt and give you the edge that you wanted to raise. Before I raise anything, let me allow honorable members to interact with the presentation, comments, questions, enhancement on what is being done here. Yeah, let me allow honorable members to do that. Can I start with you, honorable Vanderbilt, followed by honorable Mbonjani, followed by Honorable Lavmo, lastly for now, Honorable Bishop. In that order, Honorable.
Chair, thanks for the opportunity. I want to say something that I didn't quite understand. As the presenter says that there's never been before policy or something. I thought in 2008 or 9, the previous minister, Khadebi, had a policy, which wasn't bad at all. So you tell me you didn't read it. Now, last time we sat on this policy and we referred it back, in fact we thought it was the process would start all over again. But it seemed that the process didn't start all over again. So I'm going to ask a few things. It is a given that the laws of the road be adhered to. There's no two ways about it. The safety, the permits, the roadworthiness, that's a given. There are laws that prescribe it. What you didn't look at in this policy is the learner. Is the learner. I want you to know, if a learner lives in X village, there where the chair is sitting, and the taxi or the mini or the midi or the bus or the whatever is going to pick me up, it's going to pick me up there or at that main road. Because from that village to that main road, I give it to you, to across this country, people still have to walk 3 or 5 or 12 kilometers. And if you didn't go and see it for yourself, you are writing the wrong policy. There is no way that you're going to pick up children on the main road and take them to a school if you can't get them from their house to the main road safely. I have done plenty of solidarity walks with learners from villages who can't even get to the main road, never mind the school. You are not caring for the learners. Can I get very angry about this? People sit in offices, they sit in provincial offices, they sit in the Department of Transport, and then they come up with something like the municipality, who can't even maintain their own potholes in the street. It's not part of their town planning tribunal. No, see, I do, because we are wasting time. I want to put it that municipalities cannot do what you are telling us. Yeah. Who is going to monitor it? Who is going to keep the budget for it? Please don't come with town planning and planning and all of that if the municipality can't even maintain a 5 kilometer road across this country in 8 of the provinces. I would like to have a list, Chairperson, of every single stakeholder and public participation across this country who were part of this. So I can see where it happens in the villages where it matters to the poor children. And then I would also like to know, how is this voucher or allowing children on the bus or the midi or the mini game to operate? Because it will start with a chair. She might be, I don't know, unaffordable position. I might be affordable. Are you going to pass me and pick up the rest, half empty or full bus? Well, I have a different system to get on that bus as well. We must look at those things. And I would really, you know, then there's this thing of closing schools. There are the things of after-hour activities. What happens to those poor children then? How would they get home? And have they investigate other alternatives. Alternatives like schools owning their own midi or mini buses and pick up the children, because a bus cannot go into all our rural areas. Please tell me you have gone to all the villages across the Eastern Cape, the far hills of KwaZulu-Natal and Limpopo, before you wrote this. This is not acceptable. We are not caring for the learner. I don't care about roadworthiness. That's a given law.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've got two questions, but before I put those questions, Chairperson, allow me to just say that one is aware of the challenges when it comes to transport policy because of our demographics. Delivery of any service becomes a challenge. It could be water, it could be transport, it could be electricity. Because of our demographics, there's one home here, a kilometer away there's another home. Really, it is a challenge, you know, we must acknowledge that. Some of these things are not of our own making. It's because where we come from, you know. Let them be acknowledged. Chairperson, on page 16, the last paragraph, you say, principals, after consultation with the school government bodies, must identify learner transport beneficiaries. Just a point of clarity, Chairperson. What will guide these school government bodies in identifying the beneficiaries? Because it may lead to all sorts of quarrels, conflict, you know. That's my first question. The second one, on page 18, you rightly point out that the whole exercise is dependent on funding. I agree absolutely with your recognition of how this policy will succeed. Now, my only concern, you know, provinces, you are saying the function will be funded through the fiscals by provincial treasuries. That's where my concern comes in. We've seen provinces struggling under unfunded mandates. Talk about rural incentives, talk about any other national directive which depended on provincial funding treasuries. This has led to all sorts of inequalities among and between provinces. How are you going to deal with provinces struggling, you know? For instance, when it comes to infrastructure, some provinces, like where I come from, have virtually stopped. They have no money. They have discontinued infrastructural development. The same thing may happen if, but I see they are saying an option of creating a conditional grant for certain learner transport will continue to be pursued. It's not part of your policy yet. kon hy sê dit tot, dit hy so kalm is, dat leaves you very unsettled emotionally, and those who do not hear me, but like courting a lady, she will say, no, wait, I'll fall in love with you, you know, and you are eager.
Then,
not as of today.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Yes, you heard my level of anger before the meeting. I'm sorry to express my disappointment. Mr. Mahoko knows very well that I have great regard for him. I'm very disappointed that he has had to present what is an atrocious policy. It is an atrocious document. It is completely unacceptable, and I'm sure he knows that. Not only, and let me just mention this, not only is it riddled with sin and gravel.
Not more. Can I go to that? We don't know that document of transport, and not what, I think that's why we did not even look at it. It's not from the Department of Basic Education. And that is why I said we are here as basic Department of Basic Education to present on, they have been working together with the Department of Transport, as to say that thing that's there. That is why I even said let it not even be distributed, because we cannot do that on their behalf, and as they are not here, it's because they haven't finalized even on their documents of, you know. So please, let us not go to that document. It's not what our organization has been based on. But it's based on the contributions and the discussions and the meetings that both departments have been having to work towards the development of the policy.
Thank you, Chair. I don't understand that it can't be based on the policy. It has to be based on the policy. That's what is being presented, is the draft policy. So can we, well, this is the first question. Can we understand at what stage this policy actually is? We did have a presentation before, as my colleagues have said, and we rejected totally what, as it appears public comment did the same, what was presented to us then. We certainly had hoped that something substantial would be presented, or substantially acceptable would be presented to us now. It's not the case. When the Minister of Transport did her budget vote speech last week, she said, as we speak, the learner transport policy is on its way to Cabinet. Mm-hmm. Having, and I then got a copy of it via your department, and I was horrified that this should be on its way to Cabinet. But, okay, so what is the position with respect to this policy? I'm disappointed that the department is even here today. Chair, one of the issues that I raised the last time, and I have to raise it again because it's in my constituency, and I very much doubt that it is limited to my constituency, where children live in a small town like New Bethesda, and where there's only a primary school, they then have to go to a hostel when they go to high school in the nearest bigger town, which in their case is Harfordet. There is no transport. Many, many, many of those children do not go to high school because their parents cannot afford the transport to Harfordet. I was certainly hoping that there'd be some level of coverage or some reference to that. There isn't. Has it not been considered at all? I'm interested also in the funding. I think my colleagues have spoken about that. There are two models on the table, it appears. One says that the provinces will be funding. The other says that the plans must be submitted centrally, and centrally a proposal that Treasury will be approached. That's in the policy itself. Can we understand, and my colleague from the IFP did mention this, the criteria that would be used in the presentation. Let me just refer to the presentation. And there is no reference to who gets subsidized. Is it quintiles 1, 2, and 3? Is it based on household income? Is it based on distance? There's no guideline whatsoever. So if you're talking a uniform policy for the entire country, then the very basic thing that you must have is the criteria on which you base the subsidy, because you're talking about subsidized transport largely. But there aren't any criteria. There's not even a criteria One could also argue about what is a suitable school. The closest school to me might be the one that is on the verge of closure because it's such a bad school. But what is a suitable school? But the basis, obviously, is who qualifies. Chair, nothing is going to work if you make two departments equally responsible. The Department of Education has in the provinces, and as this policy actually refers to the Department of Education on a national basis, not the Department of Basic Education, anyway. But who is the lead department? The policy actually doesn't say. It's constantly both departments. There are just so many, Chair, I've got so many, many questions. Let me just give you an example of the kind of conflicts. I'm going to read from the policy. It says the mainstream, this is 2.2.1, the mainstream public transport must be used to transport learners where possible, including integrated public transport networks. But on page 8, it says, learners who live in areas, the focus will be on learners who live in areas where they cannot access public transport services. And then on page 22, it says the inclusion of a learner into the subsidized services scheme must take into account existing learner transport services, and that low learner transport must be provided in areas where public transport is available. Public transport is not just a bus. So if there are taxis running in the middle of the Peru, you're not going to provide learner transport because there's public transport available. This is the extent of the nonsense that this policy absolutely is. You need to throw it back to the Department of Transport and say, we will not be part of this. This is not going to address the needs of our learners. I am really disappointed to be in any way aligned with an department that accepts this as a policy that will address the needs of our learners. It will not.
Let us aid.
about with you will be something that we can all associate ourselves with. We have said this is still on the developmental stages, this is still a process, and we are working on that process. That is why I feel so strongly when we do that, because no one has said this is the final policy, this is what is going to go out on. We are here to work on that one. So really that is why I had to say what I just said. But it's fine if ever that is what you feel, but I had to stand in for the committee itself, for the image of the committee today. We understand fully what it is that you are doing on this committee today. Honorable Osho.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Most of the questions have been asked, but I just want to mention that with regard to boarding schools, Schoolmansdorp and Mpumalanga, quite a few primary schools have closed. The children have to go to boarding schools. There's no transport for them. So that has to be looked at as well. And then you speak about these taxi routes, the inaccessible routes where people have to transport their own children because the department is not able to provide transport. We've just seen a taxi war going on the outskirts of Mbombela because the routes belong to the taxis and the buses are taking over. How are you going to bridge that problem? What are you going to do about inaccessible routes where buses can't go in? I know my colleague from Limpopo spoke about it the other day. The school's right up on top of the hill. It's 7 kilometres. How do the kids or the learners get there? I know of a route in Mpumalanga where the primary school children are left on the side of the road because their brother and sister, who are their caretakers, get on the bus to be transported to the high school in the town, and those little kids have to walk on their own for 5 kilometres because they're not allowed on the bus. And the school's name is Enkeldoorn, if you want to know. And then you speak of people on the bus, like the bus driver ensuring the safety of the children. How is the bus driver going to do that, if I understood it correctly? Because he has to keep his eyes on the road. He cannot see to it that the children are not misbehaving. You need to have a senior educator on those buses to ensure the safety of our learners are looked after. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I know you are going to respond. Can I take you on the next round?
Which time?
Yeah. So I'll take you on the next round. It's fine. There's four. I'll take another four.
Honorable Bishop has just forgot to run.
If I may ask through you, Chair, what are we going to do with our learners with physical disabilities or mental disabilities? How are we going to approach that issue to ensure their safety as well? Thank you.
Thank you. Did you talk to us about the school of choice? We said we might be coming up with a new policy, but we do have experiences. We do have a baseline that we are working on. We know the challenges that we have faced when it comes to the issue of learner transport. And for me, we are not starting from scratch. So there are experiences, the issues of beneficiaries that you have been asked, but you know, where I was saying about the parent who wants to choose who is, you know, who is entitled to this. But also on page 14, I was a little bit worried as to say that dedicated subsidized transport would be implemented in only those areas with no public transport services. Talk to us about that one. I've even underlined it in your presentation as to say what is it that you mean. Maybe we need to know exactly the criteria of identifying these learners as we move forward. And it's very important, really, the way that we have separated it now. The subsidized transport, how to determine the subsidized and the non-subsidized, because I think as we move forward, even if it must be said in the policy itself, but even to talk to the public out there as to say, we're talking of internal transport of which it needs to be safe, but there are categories of this transport where we need to take in, you need to account as Department of Basic Education if you find our learners standing on the roads without any transport, as to say, who are those learners who are, you know, who benefit directly from this one that should be subsidized, and why are they subsidized on that one, what is it that we have put on. So we need to be very clear with the public and people out there. But I like the way to say all the learner transport, whether it's the choice of the parent or is the transport that the learner has chosen themselves, it needs to be regulated and be governed by the acts and the regulations. But really, the way you have categorized it, one of the things that we all need to go out there to public and state and explain to them and to say, this is the kind of transport that we are talking about, and this is what you should expect. You can respond so that I can go to another round of questions.
Thank you, Chair. We both I'll start and then some of folks will come in. I think presently we do have funding. I mean, provinces fund the scholar transport, but if you look at what we're funding, is that we probably cover maybe 60% of the beneficiaries that should basically receive scholar transport. So you've got a portion of learners that are not covered. And that's something we, it's not the policy itself that will help us get that, but one of the things when we were talking about the funding and we were referring to provincial treasury is that we've already started the discussion that if we have identified a beneficiary, and Mr. Mapoko, what we mean by that in the criteria, we should then have funding. So that discussion we started with national treasury, but it will be implemented in a process. And leading up to what the Honorable Lovemore was asking, who is the lead department? Basically, there are two departments involved, but this is one of the issues that has not led to a policy being finalized for many years. In fact, there is no policy. You'll also elaborate on the question of whether there was a policy in the past by the Department of Transport. But presently, we have about five provinces who are where the function has been allocated to the Department of Transport or roles in their province, and there are four others which are basic education, and one of them is about to transfer the function to transport. But that does not mean that if it's in transport, it's in basic education, or education has no responsibility because the learner belongs to the department. So that is why we are in it, irrespective of what the relationship is. But you can see it's leading towards that there is an integrated transport policy that is there, so the Department of Transport will need to take a lead. Now, the Minister of Transport made that statement in her speech. I think the intention was for the Department of Transport to come and explain and present the policy in this committee, but they've got other things. So it was also news to us that it's going to cabinet. But it's something we will deal with the department, and the minister will take up with Minister Peters. But basically, from our side, we are still to go to the Council of Education Ministers on the issues that we've had. We have to report back, but we will take that up in that banner in that regard. But the two departments are working together. Maybe we should speak the same language. And when I say maybe someone is speaking Afrikaans and someone else is speaking in the bill or something in the meetings. But I think we'll take that up in that regard. But the funding basically would be is that we're looking at national treasury to have, when we refer, why we talk of the conditional grants is to try to secure them funds. So that when it gets to the province and the provincial treasury allocates it to either the lead department, then we are able to know that it will be utilized for scholar transport. It's part of the DORA, and that's why there's a proposal to look at conditional grants, although accounting officers sometimes do other things in that regard. The other issue about the lead department is that the premier, in terms of the constitution, would decide how the portfolios are designated in the province, and therefore we cannot, you know, in the policy itself, if we put down one of the lead departments, we may be in violation of the constitution in that regard. So it's something the committee could, apply its mind and even advise us on in that regard. I think some of the issues are also in the policy itself. You cannot have all the details in that. Some of them are operational. And in fact, if a policy is in place, then there needs to be an implementation plan that needs to come, which has to be funded as well. But without the policy being there, you know, we haven't finalized, we could even consider regulations on certain areas if we believe that implementation is going to lead to some non-implementation. So I think we're not, if you're going to keep, if we continue to discuss Woolheath, I think we'll still be where we were, you know, another 5 years or 7 years will pass. So that is why we had, you know, discussion set aside the issue about Woolheath, that the policy at the end of the day should set the guide, should set the framework in which whoever is leading needs to abide by. Mr. Mafoko will come in.
Thank you, Acting DG. I think the comment by Acting DG to the effect that quite a number of issues that were raised by honorable members are operational in nature, that covers it quite a lot, because a policy cannot include operational matters. To that effect, an implementation document or whatever you call it will have to be drawn to address all those operational issues. For instance, when you talk about, to take the question raised by Honorable Lovemore in terms of learners living in the town and having to be transported to a hostel or vice versa, you already have these kinds of situations. It's an operational issue that has to be addressed by the problem. We have about four hostels that we have opened in Mpumalanga, just to give an example. And Honorable Boshoff, that matter we have to follow it up, because that is one area that we have been working with the Mpumalanga department in those hostels that are open, that at the beginning of the term, those learners are taken from home to the school. At the close of the term, those learners are taken from school to home. And if there is a need over weekend, those learners have to be transported from home to school and vice versa. So those are issues that will have to be addressed at a provincial level in terms of operations. And you cannot put every little thing into the policy. But those are issues that we will address. And the examples that you have raised, we will definitely follow up. But to start with the question raised by Honorable Van der Waal, there was never a policy. Even the document that was released in 2008, that is around the time when the debate around the development of the policy started. There was a research document that was released by the Department of Education and another released by the Department of Transport. And those two documents informed the genesis of the process to develop this policy. So, in effect, there has never been a directed policy with regard to the national transport. That I can vouch for. So, all the time we have been working on draft documents, and as Acting DG has said, this process has been going on for more than 9 months because of the issue of around where the function should lie and those kinds of issues. But also to indicate that the thrust of the document is to say, irrespective of where the function is, whether it's in transport, whether it's in education, whether it's in police, this document would guide the implementation of that function. So whether you give it to me or you give it to Acting DG to implement, there must be a single mode of implementation, and this would be the document as and when it's
the final document.
The final policy. Right. Now, the issue of, I think, Honorable Bonjan, around the issue of beneficiaries, what will guide principals in consultation with the school governing bodies and so on. If members remember what we presented in the previous document, it's just a pity that we didn't elaborate on this. But we say, for instance, this policy talked about providing transport to learners from grade R to grade 12, that's one. Learners transported to the nearest appropriate school, meaning that subsidized learner transport will not cater for schools of choice. The issue of kilometers, the guidelines would indicate in terms of Remember, in the policy we are talking about, learners should not travel for more than a distance of 5 kilometers. So those are issues that will go into the final document, obviously. And so the training aspect of school governing bodies in terms of how do you identify a beneficiary and determine whether a learner qualifies for subsidized learner transport will be clearly spelled out. And as and when we train parents and school governing bodies, they will be taken through that process to ensure that there is a uniform process across the country sector in terms of who benefits and who does not benefit. Because at this stage, one of the challenges that we have is that we are saying, and just a correction to DG, currently we are transporting 71% of the learners who, in terms of the different criteria across the sector, qualify for learner transport. But we cannot say that because it's not uniform. One province is using this, one province is using a different criteria. So you find that in some instances, in one province, a learner who qualifies for learner transport might not necessarily qualify in another. So there needs to be that uniform approach, and this is what this policy is trying to address. So Honourable Bonjani, that matter will be addressed in the implementation. I think, Honourable Bishop, the issue of learners with disabilities has been addressed extensively. Even in the draft document, we addressed the issue, and that is one matter that we strongly discussed with the Department of Transport in finalizing even the draft, that the issue of learners with disabilities will have to be addressed. And even in when we presented the document to see the draft document to see, even MSC was very strong about it, to say we need to ensure that vehicles that are transporting learners with disabilities are adapted for that particular purpose, and that will have to be on an incremental basis. So that issue has even got a policy statement in the document that deals with how do we address learners with disabilities. I'm not sure, TDG, if I have left anything.
Yes, you have, Mr. You know this one that we have been always talking about, even as a committee. It has been raised even today, where a learner, even at first, tried to introduce the issue of bicycles, because there are learners who live far away from the pickup areas of which I have mentioned. How are we catering for that? That is part of the policy, or it should be, you know. But how are we catering for those learners really whom we find that they live up the mountain or down the valley, for them to walk to the pickup area is still a distance that can even take more than 5 kilometers itself. Is there any catering?
Yeah, I now realize why I forgot to mention, because the difficult one to respond to it. Check. The implementation of a policy like this, or the provision of learner transport, is not the solution to the challenges of access. I think in some of the inputs, honourable members mentioned the issue of inaccessible routes, which are the responsibility of other departments. You know? So we need to look at, and those are matters that cut across different sectors. We need to look at other solutions, for instance, in terms of how do we ensure that those learners do have access to quality education. And the issue of boarding schools comes into place, just to give an example, that in instances where you have those learners that might be staying in areas that are quite inaccessible, because the Honourable Bonjani mentioned it in his opening remarks, that the issue of geography and location is not of our making. Some of our learners are staying in areas that are just totally inaccessible. And you, as a department, we cannot say those learners cannot access the school. We have to find a way of getting those learners. one issue that we have a challenge with even currently is that in some provinces you advertise routes, you don't even get takers for those routes because of the difficulty. There is no one who would want to take his vehicle into that route, you know. So even if there is money allocated to transport those learners from those routes, providers don't even want to go there. Okay, so we have to find other alternatives to take those learners out. And as I say, boarding schools might be another solution, and so on. And in totality, honorable members, the provision of learner transport is being looked at in terms of the total access program, which includes the provision of infrastructure and so on. So our vision is that in the long term, the provision of learner transport should decrease rather than increase as we provide access to our learners. The provision of learner transport, even well, we cannot totally get rid of learner transport. Even in developed countries like the U.S., we still have learner transport. But it's at a minimum. So the vision is that in the ultimate end, the provision of learner transport should be reduced to an absolute minimum where we only transport those learners where we absolutely have to. So that should be encompassed in the total program of providing access, which includes providing schools, providing boarding facilities, and providing other forms to ensure that our learners have access. I hope I tried to address it.
Thank you very much, Sir President. I think the last part, the first part has been answered, the issue of whether the policy is indicating whether this issue of scholar transport is not a permanent thing. It's something that is it should be addressing some of the shortages of schools. And once the schools have been built, there must be indication of whether there's a reduction, more especially in the Eastern Cape, because I think there are city schools that have already been built. Maybe the question on that one is that, is this scholar transport in the Eastern Cape showing any indication of reducing as there are schools and that have been built? That is question number one. And the number two is the issue of there are schools I kept on reporting about two schools in Mpumalanga, Ger Sibande and Mpuluzi Circuit. In February they had this scholar transport for 4 or 5 years consecutively operating. All of a sudden in February the scholar transports were stopped. But on investigation by the same department, by the scholar the transport, they found that it was erroneously done. That it was erroneously done. But still, we wrote so many letters to the department. Nothing has happened until this case. I think a week or two, they went for a strike. There was this strike, full-blown strike in those communities because the issue has not been addressed up to so far in Kitchano. Is there anything that has been done? Because I did indicate that to the department. Thank you very much, Professor. Is that those schools are one Kobane Combined School and the other one is MP Makahula High School. Thank you very much.
Yeah, Chairperson, I've got one question, but before the question, I want to appeal to members here that in most instances we have to be able to assist in finding solutions. In terms of the how do we want to shape up the policies that are supposed to be assisting us as members of this committee, because really if we are going to be able to throw everything to the department and in instances it become even more emotional, so we tend to lose a point in trying to assist the situation. So that is my appeal, that our attitude towards the department it's supposed to be a little bit changed, and we present our cases in a more formal and more directive way that will be able to assist the department. To the department, I want to check in the issue of the mass science and technology schools in terms of transport, because you will find that the school is identified as a mass science and technology school, and within the school there are those who are not doing math and science in terms of their choices. So I want to check in the issue of the transport whether they will be catered for, because it is not their own making that they find themselves in that situation. And for that matter, it is the only secondary school in that area where the school is supposed to be math, science and technology school. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you from the department for the presentation. Chairperson, I may talk outside what Chairperson presented. I don't know if you're correct. I am looking into the challenges that the department has got, the challenges of the curriculum, its education, its nutrition, its books, its transport, its health, its safety. Now, I'm looking into a situation whereby the whole thing that makes the department to have to go further into having to support learners with transport, I think it goes back with maybe poverty, unemployment or something like that. Now, has ever the department thought of looking into those areas which are very poor and those scholars, and maybe introduce a voucher system of the total amount that the department is spending? Because out of all these areas that I've mentioned, including health, etc., there's a lot of money that the department is spending per child. Now, if parents could be in a position to have money, surely I am sure they would be in a position to handle all these things. I'm just thinking, if to lessen the burden of everything that has to be done by the department, everything, whereas maybe parents, if they are supported in a voucher form, to make sure that they are not going to check out our shop right to buy with that voucher. It's specifically for that particular purpose, if it's transport. And then they can group themselves, and then the department can only get in into making sure that the policy is adhered to in terms of road readiness, etc., etc., etc. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much, Honorable Majek. In as much as I'm tempted to get into what you're saying, let me not see what I'm going to do to discuss it. Honorable Fasson.
Allow me to contribute on the because it seems as if there is a misunderstanding between a policy and the opposition. A draft policy is to be implementation. Because it seems as if most some of the things that we are mentioning to speak in the policy are things that should be in the implementation. Why do I say that the Maputo staff explains that the policy is there to put the standard, to give guidance? Then situations from province to province differ. That the implementations cap where this is happening in Western Cape, but not happening in the Cape. If we speak about mountainous areas where it is difficult to access, where transport do not want to transport learners, of which such a problem will not get in the country. Those will be reflected in the operational document. There are challenges that are common challenges in the country, of which also I would like to get guidance. You say the transport is focusing from Cape Town to Cape Town. Yes. You find that in this area qualifies for a bus because there are a number of learners from Cape Town to Cape Town. But there comes a challenge. This great art and grade 12 finds of getting out of school. The high school is up to 82. They get out of school. The foundation phase is 12. You will find these poor, small grade R learners, or grade R learners, waiting for the transport. And this transport will come when the high school learner is it is an operational problem. It should be captured. That difference should be captured in the policy. That difference, even the bullying in the past, to have a common transport for different things about safety. It should it be captured on the policy that different transport should accommodate learners. We spoke about usually I had an accident whereby a small child had to keep close to the door because the bus is full, and the door of the bus is open, the child is pushed and dropped by the bus, under the bus. And we speak about this law enforcement, but I don't know, it's quiet to say what type of punitive measures will be there for those who do not comply with this policy. One mentioned that there was a strike for a number of things and what and whatnot. At the end, it happens. These people, they strike when they don't get their payment on time. But at the end, when payment is done, being done for the school money, I would like to see whether, I don't know whether this will be for operational measures. How are the people going to be punished, those who have not rendered the gratitude for the money? You said there's a community that they are traveling. The contrast between changes, the damage is huge after. The contrast is open for the number of, for the years. They are kept, it is 3 years, for 7 years. The contrast is that for 7 years, every month I must get a check of my control. In conclusion, thank you, thank you, for me now, there is about it is that this policy is to set the uniform. from standards, norms and standards, will these norms and standards also be reflected on the finances as we have said the transport the vehicle is moving on the car is not should not be treated the same as the vehicle.
Thank you so much.
I just have to announce you that you need to be involved in women in transport.
Thank you so much. Basically, yes, before you even respond, hearing from the contributions that you are getting today, the questions that you are getting today, it takes a way forward as to say when we have got both departments where you are coming back with the final policy. With that day, we must be having a discussion looking at the policy itself and its implication on the guidelines and the implementation processes and what is going to happen to the provinces. Because I think right now, whatever we are throwing in your basket is to say, go back, finalize the policy with the department that you are working with. But as we have said, the learner will always be a learner that belongs to your department. Work on those things. Make sure that you are a health department that is going to take care of the learner's interest to themselves. And we are expecting those guidelines to cater for almost all the contributions that we have just made as the committee, because most of them are operational. They want to see that the learner is being taken care of. Though in as much as I loved and I like the way you have said, one policy can never be the answer to every challenge that you are facing. And indeed, with this learner transport policy, it is not going to answer all our challenges when it comes to the access of learners and even to the transportation of learners as such. But it's one policy that we are seeing that if it is well crafted and well developed and well implemented, is going to contribute more towards more access of our learners. Though we are not going to and saying there is a policy and there is nothing else that we do. We are seeing from the discussion today that there is still so much that the department needs to sit down and make sure that what is not being covered or what cannot be covered by this policy, but the department is still going to come in and make sure that all the learners are being catered for. DJ, over to you to respond to the question.
Thank you. I think from a focal answer on Mpumalanga and Eastern Cape, on the maths and science schools and when do we transport, basically it's about the schools of choice. Where parents have decided to take their children to a school, then they would basically have to look at how they transport. But for instance, if there was no secondary school and we had decided that it's to go to a school or that you've targeted a certain number of learners to go to a math and science, a focus school, then it would be for the department to ensure that there is a mode of transport for the children to go there. And scholar transport, whether bus or a school transport as such, would be have to accommodate that. That's what we're saying as well. And that you'd see in the plans. I think our policies in terms of the scholar transport are looking at pro-poor. I'm not sure how the Treasury would look at a voucher system. I mean, it's been discussed in the past for other issues, like textbooks and things, and it has not found favor. But generally, if you look at it, there is an appetite to ensure that those who are who need the transport, that is what we need to care for. And I think this policy is setting out that you need to have proper planning. You target the right audience and the learner that actually is the real beneficiary and not someone who out of their own choice leaves the school that they could have gone to, which is nearer to their home. We're looking at learners who need to get access for what is poverty. The other would be that if there are issues related to the combination of whether there's a primary or a secondary school. I think the Honorable Basson raised issues, but I think it is not for this policy, because then you would put it into every policy you have, because when we speak of the hostel plan as well, it's not without its dangers. And that one of the things the minister says is that the hostel plan may work well for secondary pupils, but does it work well for a child who's in grade one who has to leave their mother and father? Although there are positives in that respect in certain instances, if you look at those that have been now put in the free state in hostels and so on, you can see a difference in their quality of life. But do you want to put this young child who's 6 or 7 with children who are 15 and 14? So you also face the issue, even in that, what you think is a solution, that there's issues related to bullying and other issues that you need to solve. The bus is also one issue, I mean, as well. And I think the policy was looking at more to address the safety of learners in terms of the example that you gave, that when the door opened and the child fell out, as well as to address the overcrowding or the fact that those who decide to arrange their own private transport, that they need to know what their responsibility is and that they transport people in a manner that is safe. So I think we cannot ignore those, but I'm saying that it may not feature in this policy, but it features in the policies of the department in its programs to look at this holistically as well. So, I think in those, what Mr. Mafoko raised about, you know, you may come across a child, children living in an area that is inaccessible, even if you have a provider, or it's maybe not viable financially to that provider as well. So we've suggested a few, but in the end, not as a mainstream activity, the departments may have to consider that it has its own forms of transport to get these children. I don't want to suggest this as a solution, but that government can think about it, that it could have its own fleet. When I say it's a fleet, it doesn't have to be a fleet. Because you have X number of children you cannot get the private sector to tender for, you may have to think of owning vehicles in which you would then have drivers who would go there and fetch those children. But that would not be the norm. But these are things that you will not be able to put into the policy, but that's where the departments need to look at how they would look at other options. But as Mr. Mabogi indicated, that the ideal would be to have schools near where children live. But then again, I think just to go back to the first question on the Eastern Cape was, there are schools that are being rationalized, so you would find more of these mega schools with hostels. But then again, as I indicated, there are other social issues that come up that we also have to take in. So you need to look at which is the lesser of the evil as such that you may want to consider.
Chair, thank you very much. I'm looking at the figures here, Honorable Mbuni, around just comparing the third quarter and the fourth quarter learner numbers who were transported. Free state, there have been quite a significant reduction in the number of learners. Northern Cape and Limpopo. I'm not very convinced about Limpopo. I have to find out what's going on here. But Eastern Cape does not reflect any reduction in the number of learners. In fact, it's showing the same number of learners from the third quarter to the fourth quarter. We usually compare the third quarter and the fourth quarter because the third quarter of the financial year is the end of the calendar year for the school, and the beginning of the calendar year in January, you should see that difference in terms of the number of learners that were transported in the previous calendar year and the new calendar year. But at this stage, the figures that are coming out don't seem to show a significant decrease in the number of learners, specifically in the Eastern Cape, but in other provinces as well. Honorable Mbuni, I've been sending emails quickly here to my team just to find out what is happening. I hope I'll get a response. In the last meeting when you raised the matter was forwarded to the department and the Department of Transport, which is providing transport in Mpumalanga, about this school. I hope I'll get a response quickly as to what advocacy on the issue. I think the others were addressed by Tim DG. From Honorable Baswan, maybe just to add to that, the issue of the different grades knocking off at different times, I think also that would also be a factor of the management of schools, you know, because you need to look at the cost implications as well. If you are going to say you are going to have five forms of transport or three forms of transport in terms of the phases, then it might end up being quite an expensive exercise. What it will mean that you will be transporting junior phase learners to the same place. Then you'll be coming to transport senior phase learners when they knock off later to the very same place again. I think it's not economically viable. But it will be a question of management to say, how do you keep the younger learners fully engaged and protected in a school while those are still going into school? And it will be a question of managing. But I'm not saying the solution, I'm not a principal of a school. And I cannot claim to be an expert on those kinds of things, but it's a way of doing it. And also the issue of dealing with punitive measures, I think it came from Honorable Baswan as well. Punitive measures for lack of compliance, I think that's a contracting matter. Those are issues that we have to be factored into the contract to say if you do not comply with this, the conditions of the contract, this would be the outcome. And the same with I think Honorable Baswan was talking about North and standards for funding, but my understanding of the question is about tariffs and not funding. I think I indicated even in the presentation that the approach is to have a guideline in terms of tariffs. That would also factor into it the issues of the conditions of road. The transport is being provided in well-maintained roads as opposed to inhospitable roads and so on. The tariff would have to take those into consideration. And that obviously would be factored when we go into a contracting process. So the tariffs would differ on the basis of those material conditions on the ground that the providers would be going to. I think, as you correctly mentioned, we've been taking copious notes. I think quite a lot of the issues that have been raised are what will go into the operational document. And we are in constant discussion with the Department of Transport, and we will be meeting them this week as well to enhance the documents. But all the matters that have been raised by honorable members obviously will be factored into that document.
Thank you so much, thank you so much, DG. I know members still have a follow-up questions, of which I will take them in one round now, then move towards the closure of the meeting. Can I see the hands for follow-ups? Honorable Salafat, Honorable Abu. Honorable Shofu Silver, then Honorable Report, and then all of you.
Okay, thanks for the second part. I just wanted to say there was a second draft on scholar transport policy in August 2007 by the then Transport Minister. And I'm also keen to whether we have actually looked at all the provincial policies, those that have. Because I've got a copy of the Western Cape here and Gauteng, I think. So we must also look at the reinvent the wheel where there are things that are working. And Chair, I want to make it clear to the acting DG and the staff. It's not that we don't want a scholar transport policy that we're unhappy. We actually want the best with what we have for the learners of South Africa. That's why we are so adamant on getting it right. Not because we don't want, but our learners deserve the best with what is available, and therefore we cannot afford to make mistakes. And I personally was very disappointed when we had the list of 10 non-negotiables from the department before us a few months ago, and scholar transport was not amongst the 10. That is very disappointing. They make the list longer, all the others are also important. But I would like to ask, besides the fact that we want copies of all the public participation so we can see where who and what was said, is also, I asked a question and I was told that it doesn't fall within whatever doesn't have the stats, because lately our written question replies are very poor and referred back forever. What are the accident stats? Are scholars being transported, whether it's public or school bus, especially the taxis? There's been a number of accidents lately where children were on or from school on the route and were in serious, serious taxi accidents. So let's look at that too when we provide this. I just want to say something about the budget. We're going to build boarding schools, but we still have schools under key. Like I mentioned, the multi-union purpose, for example. And if you look at boarding, yes, at Messina Primary, you can sort of start there. I can show you another one in Bochum. No, they're not actually on that list, by the way. But that's another topic. Just by the way, last week I sat here and spoke about sanitary towels, and I was told the learners don't drop out. 2 days later, in this parliament, the minister stood up and told us the stats of learners dropping out of school because of sanitary towels. So we must be very careful what we say in this committee. Always somebody else comes up with a different opinion. I just want to say something about the budget and the issue of those who can afford and not afford. I have a completely different economic view. If your bus is not full and there is a learner on route who can afford, charge them. It will make the finance level better. Don't cut them out completely. Maybe they can afford to get to school on their own, but you know, if the bus is half empty or half full, why not pick them up if they're on route and make them pay for it and add to the kitty of transport? But here's the problem. And we have now seen several ministers taking action because conditional grant is not spent on what it is conditional for. And the same thing is going to happen here. I don't want to be, I'm not a negative person, but how are we going to monitor the implementation of this? And I hear all about the operational and the plan, but I understand that very well. It's 20 years that I've been a public head. The point is this. If you cannot monitor the plans of the departments in the provinces, what's your policy going to be worth? Why? And really, you know, this is about the learners. And the acting DG said, the learners are the business of Department of Basic Education. So we must really, 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 chairperson, I don't think this is even close to a final document. Because I really, there are too many concerns still. And we cannot go for second best when it comes to transporting learners. Of course, their safety is priority. And of course, we must get them to school on time. But we've got to go and fetch them and take them to school. It's not their fault that they live in a remote area. It's not their fault. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Honorable Nagmo.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think my question is, Bush has spoken about the issue of the lean department. And I hear what our DBE colleagues have to say about this. If we have to continue with that argument, we would delay the policy for years. I can't speak for the rest of the committee. Certainly our feeling is that the Department of Basic Education and the Department of Education in the provinces must be the lead agents. This is about children. And I think the first draft of this policy that was put out for public comment was a very good indication that the Department of Transport's focus is not on the children. It was, that policy was full, and I'm very glad it's out of here now, that's at least one positive thing. That policy was filled with, I don't even know if I'm using the right technical terms, like axle weights and all sorts of technical stuff that should never be in any policy. But that's the focus of the Department of Transport. Department of Education should be, any Department of Education should be focused on learners, and that's what this policy was focused on. So I don't buy that there can't be a conclusion to this discussion. The lead department should be the Department of Basic Education and the Department of Education in the province is finished. With respect to what is a policy issue and what is an operational issue, I understand that the line is fine, but the criteria cannot be just operational. If you're saying that people must draw up plans based on this policy, you have in fact said in the policy document somewhere along the line that one of the objectives is to provide norms and standards. I can't draw up a plan if you don't tell me who qualifies for scholar transport, and you don't. It doesn't say only poor people, and what are poor people? There's no distance, there's no nothing. There are no criteria whatsoever in this policy. It was indicated that that would come in a later draft. Well, you know, I've got no guarantee of that. All I've got is what I've got in front of me right now to go on. It is not an operational issue. That is an absolute policy issue. I'm going to link to, no, it's not directly linked, but the transport to hospitals is not just an operational issue. That's transport to hospitals. If we are more and more wanting to build hospitals to accommodate children, I know in the Free State Chair, when we visited, you will remember that there were close to 300 schools, rural schools with single teachers. The answer to that was to build rural hospitals, which means that you need to transport to get the kids there. Hospitals is not isolated to New Bethesda and transport, New Bethesda and Crawford. It's not an Eastern Cape issue. It is not an operational issue. It's a policy issue. The question about public transport was not answered. This policy says that the focus will be on learners who live in areas where public transport is not available. Public transport includes taxis. If there is a taxi going from Klipplaas to Jansenville, that means that children who need to get to Jansenville to go to school, as no matter how poor they are, will not be considered because it's a public transport service. So that needs to be answered. Chair, my last question is on norms and standards and when those will be part of the policy. It says in the policy, the primary objective of the National Learner Transport Policy is to provide uniform approach, norms and standards. Now, I would expect, for example, somewhere to say that you can't use buggies or whatever it might be, that there's no norms and standards with respect to vehicles that can be used. There are no norms and standards with respect to authorization. Must they be authorized users, or are they just authorized to, in terms of the public, I don't know what the thing's called, the CDP? In terms of the Road Traffic Act, how do you get authorized? What is authorized? These sort of things are not explained. So I presume all of that would be contained within the norms and standards, but this specifically says the objectives of the policy is to provide norms and standards, and it doesn't. So can you assist with how you are going to indeed provide the uniform approach and the norms and standards? Thank you, Chair.
You have contributed to the policy. We have added on the gaps that we have been talking about. Thank you so much. We love, always love to be doing the love of the people. Thank you.
not negotiable. Sometimes when you put up a slide, you put 10 points in 10 words. But if you look at beyond those non-negotiables, even in curriculum, there's like about 5 or 7 other things that fall behind it. And we also indicate infrastructure, but infrastructure is bigger. It's about school building and basic services, and it includes scholar transport. So, I'm just saying from us, it doesn't mean our workload is that slide that is there, bigger than that. So I think we have not ignored scholar transport. We look at this excellent case, but I think it's going to be difficult to get, especially if it's not involving scholar transport. It's in a private, subsidized transport. But we will, there are ways to look at this as well. I think the kilometers was in the earlier draft, but it was taken out. In that you can, you know, I'm talking about we have kilometers, but it works both ways. You can put a kilometer and then any child inside the radius of the 5. You've got a policy, therefore you're not supposed to assist it. Because it says 5 kilometer radius. So there are instances where even a 2 kilometer may require a child to be assisted. You know, it's a matter of how you draft. Sometimes we put in that the MEC may decide otherwise or something like that. If you want that, you know, you can put the kilometer, but you need to look at the, that you don't want to restrict yourself, that if a child inside the ranges is then excluded and then they actually justify it. You could have a child that, depending on how you word it, even the special needs child would be excluded then.
But did you want to still there, what is the criteria really that you get in this policy? Just talk to us on that one. Either it is covered or not, because you are saying you are adding, you are contributing. According to your own understanding, because it is something that you cannot get. What is it exactly that you say this is the criteria for the child to benefit from that? Other than the kilometers themselves, as you are saying.
Let us start with the issue of the kilometer radius and vary. The agreement from both transport and ourselves is that we are looking at a 5 kilometer range of 2 and 5 kilometers. So if you are talking about 10 kilometers, okay. So a learner who's traveling more than the 5 kilometers, the single to 5 kilometers span, should be provided with transport. But as DG correctly say, you need to craft it in such a way that those learners that might have to be transported because of one reason or another, who will be within that region, we need to make sure that we make provision for those learners to be transported as well. Okay. So that is the major criteria at this stage. Obviously, all learners with disabilities will have to be provided with transport. I think the issue of schools of choice is if there is a school nearer to where the learner is located, that the learner can be admitted to, that the learner has to be provided with transport. It is in the document. That is in the document, of course. So I'm not outlining them as they are articulated in the document, but giving the broad brush of what we are talking about in terms of who will benefit and who will not benefit in terms of the new policy. I hope I meet.
But then you are assuring us that because what we just see that has not been submitted are the very draft documents. Maybe you are saying as we are moving towards the finalization, those are the things that are covered. Because what we are saying as a committee, if ever they are not covered, please make sure that in the policy, we want to see the final policy having covered some of these things, because those are the things we feel strongly that they must be indicated in the policy. If ever we agree on that one, I am covered.
If the Department of Transport was here, that would assist a lot, because some of the issues that are removed and added into the different draft is as a result of agreements and disagreements between. It's a very difficult process to deal with a policy that straddles departments. And as VG said, we have it, the issue of the kilometers. It with the different stakeholders on an operational document. It's already a voluminous document that includes quite a lot of this contracting, elaborating on identification of beneficiaries and many other things, which I think by the time the policy is approved, the operational document should be followed quite closely to that. And I think it would assist maybe even before we finalize this, we expose members of the committee to that operational document, because many of the matters that have been raised are in the operational document.
Maybe in a joint meeting, say, for us and France, when the final draft is done.
And also just to indicate, Chair, Honourable Van der Waal talked about provincial policies. We have a inter-provincial committee that sits on a quarterly basis. Initially, that committee was a DVE committee on learner transport. But since the last financial year, we have included Department of Transport that are providing the service. So it's a kind of a joint committee where we look at all these operational issues in the province, get reports and all that. So definitely, the provincial policies as they are being implemented currently have been factored into the document, because the policy since this committee was instituted is a standing agenda item in all our meetings, because we have a common agenda in terms of this policy. We all want to see it being finalized and some of it is changed. Check. The taxi, in our definition of public transport, taxis are not really a provider, you know. However, remember, I think in one of the questions, I think it's honorable for we have different modes of transport when we go out to solicit service providers, depending on the number of learners that will be transported in a particular route. In some instances, the request would be for X number of learners to be transported, and in that instance, a kundi, or what do we call it, would be, the minibus would be sufficient to transport this number of learners. And of course, buses and minibuses and so on. But I'm trying to explain it, DG, maybe you'll assist me.
I think when we refer to the taxi, is that if the child had to pay for the taxi, that means they could afford it. We don't. It's not the child that we will be providing. If we're providing for a child, they need to be the processes need to be followed. That this minibus taxi or the is part of it. So it's in a way it's a tender that they are in the process. But if that's the sole transport, then that cannot be that. It doesn't matter what the policy says. We still haven't done our job to provide transport to children in that geographic area. If taxis is the only mode of people in that geographic area that they work in, that means we would have to pay the taxi driver. If the children are paying from their pocket, that means their parents can afford and they've chosen that mode. But for us, from moving from their home to their school, we still need to do our job to get it vetted through the criteria we're talking about and it meets them. The taxi would come in, to me, the taxi is like in Kaoteng. Because there's taxis, buses, trains, and everything else, people use them, make their own discretion, but they are still paying for it. But when the state has to say, I'm subsidizing, we have to agree that this, because a taxi, it's a business person. It's a business person that comes in. So we would have, but if it's the only transport, we would need to say that we have to go through the processes that we have to contract them. But if they're not contracted to us, then they just like any of us would, if you want to jump in, we stop the taxi, jump in and you pay your fare. But if we need to contract them and pay them, and that would be the thing, then it's called a transport. But it cannot be that, because there's a taxi, whether we're in the province or whatever, we say no, we put up our hands and say no, it's not our problem. because we've not provided a solution to the dilemma. We're just leaving it. So I'm just saying maybe we'll go back to the definition of it. But with the Department of Transport, public, it depends. Because taxis are like, even the bus, the subsidy question, it would be something that I think, you can have a Prasa and others that would come and use their buses, but at the end of the day, they'll come back and ask us to pay something. Maybe not the full rate, but then that would be something the child may not see. But I think then the voucher, I don't know how to call it a voucher, but probably children will have their bus tickets, their transportation tickets as such to utilize it. But I think the key, the more difficult one is to ensure, because I think we have the modes of transport in the urban areas, but in the rural areas, if you don't have a provider, you've got to be looking at some other plan to ensure that children get to school. Irrespective of whether it rains or whether there's a road or there's nothing. I mean, in exams, we have the helicopters on standby even to transport children sometimes. But I'm saying I'm not going, that's probably not sustainable.
Can you please go there and make sure that you effect and you add
the discussions that we have had today. But otherwise, Honorable, I thought I was addressing you.
Chair, I just want to raise a point of clarity with you. There is no obligation on either department to bring this back to this committee. There's no obligation, no legal obligation to bring this back to this committee. So do we have a commitment to bring it back to this committee before it gets finalized? Or how? What makes you think that it's going to come back? Do we have that commitment?
There is no obligation, but it's one of our programs, all the departments, we can call them at any time to say, this is the policy that touches the Department of Education, of which we are overseeing on. Yes, definitely, we are going, because even today we had scheduled this meeting, but due to those challenges, so we are committing to say, we are still going to schedule that meeting where they will have to bring it to us so that we can meet on all policies that here. Yeah, that's what okay. But all in all, really, for me, honorable members, for me, DBE, I know that our meeting started on a very high note today. But again, what I would say on behalf of the committee, sometimes the way we want to show our emotions, you know, and the things that we are so much attached to, maybe we react in different ways. It's fine. It was the way we have shown that how much we care for our learners out there and how much we take this policy seriously. So today, it is one of the vehicles that are going to open up the doors for our learners out there, and most especially the poor people, because most of the time when you look at this policy, it touches the poorest of them all, down there in those rural areas where they've got no other choice but to rely on this. So really, I take it to all of us who have shown that passion and that eagerness of wanting to make sure this service comes to its final vision and we can see it being rolled out there. As to say the leading department and so forth, as I said, that is a constitutional measure. Sometimes you can't go into the provinces and tell the premier to say which one should be. We can always add our ideas. That's exactly what I'm saying. We can always give our ideas and views, but we know that at the end, that is a constitutional matter of which we cannot get into. But what we all want to see is the policy when it has been finalized. We want to see it being implemented because we want to see it benefiting those learners out there, making the lives of our communities seem easier. So let us stop there for now with all the contributions that we have made. We will make a follow-up and to say how then we call them so that we discuss the things that we finalize. But please make sure you also work on that implementation document as we've been talking about. Thank you so much, honorable members. Thank you so much, thank you. Thank you so much for taking part of our meeting and the meeting session. No, let us adopt this minute, honorable members, please. Honorable members, let us adopt the minute. We are very much happy. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. It's not to do, you spoke about learner wellness.
And then she raised the fact that does it have an impact on women if children do not have access to sanitary towels? And he said there's no correlation that it does do that. Can we just ask her to say what she said, because it's not relevant. Remember Dr. Wiggins? It's on
page 4, where it says up there, where it says members welcome the congregation and highlighted the following given their presentation. Bullet number 1, 2, 3. Members express concerns over a possible link between poor sanitation and the funds and the availability of it.
I think that covers the
situation. But it doesn't cover what Dr. Whipple said. Because Dr. Whipple said there is no correlation.
To page 5, the department indicated that they found no evidence that sanitation was out by girls.
It's well covered.
Okay.
Good.